This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3281 for Monday the 1st of March 2021. Today's show is entitled, HPR Community News for February 2021, and is part of the series, HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers, and is about 69 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, HPR volunteers talk about shows released, and comments posted in February 2021.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. Today, this is HPR Community News for February 2021. And joining me today is...
Hello, it's Dave Morris, as usually is, that's a bit of a pattern, I guess.
Yes.
Anybody else care to join, then be very welcome.
Exactly. And this is the HPR Community News show for February. And in the Community News, we look back at the shows of the previous month, make sure everyone's get a mention. And that's about that. So, as we normally do, Dave, would you like to welcome in the new hosts?
Yes, we have two new hosts, which is it's quite a turn up for the books and wonderful to see. And I checked how the first person says their name, and it's 09L is the pronunciation.
09L.
Yeah. So, and the second person is some guy on the internet, which is
absolutely brilliant.
And
yes. So the first show of last month just happens to be the community news for last month, which is episode 2361. And we had zero comments.
That's right.
But, yeah, Dave, we're not being controversial enough.
I'll say it again. We tried last time.
Nobody cares.
Bad things, but nobody cares, as you say.
Yeah. Swift 110, my thoughts on diversity in Linux and open source, where he gives some background to the story and certain frustrations he experienced in life. Loads of comments. First by Norris, Storyteller. Thank you, Swift110, for the episode. You have a gift for storytelling. I hope you continue. This is an important issue. I don't know how to help except to promote stories like this. I look forward to hearing from Swift110 again.
Excellent. And Bill N1VUX, probably pronounced differently, says, well said. I agree with Norris. Swift110 is quite the storyteller. I could tell you were a man of taste when I saw the ThinkPad in your prior EPS listing. T420 is a great Linux platform, especially sweet if bought refurbished. Smiley faced. For what it's worth, Wikipedia says Langston Terraces were second federally funded projects in the nation. Yeah, that's an allusion to the discussion in the show. You're asking good questions, he says. One of the newest housing projects in Boston has a technology center within the campus, co-sponsored by MIT, southendtechcenter.org. When Ubuntu Loco teams were disestablished, some of the core volunteers here moved there.
Oh, very good. Kevin O'Brien says, further discussion. I thought this show was timely and I would welcome further discussion. Free software and open technology create possibilities, but they aren't guaranteed if people don't take the necessary actions.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Blizzak.
Ooh. Yep, but Dave, Blizzak exceeded the maximum length of a comment.
Ooh.
And did a part one of two.
Oh, indeed, indeed. Yes, yes. I did notice that, having proved them and stuff. But yeah, it's I hadn't really twigged. I just do the mechanics of this, really thinking about it.
Do we read the comment or do we narrate it for a separate show? Too important a discussion not to read it, Dave.
I vote for reading personally. Yes.
Please
send in a show because there's some show. Amazing
there's a
stuff
we
here.
Have a comment loomed.
Yes. So as Blitzak says, systematically kept out part one. Obviously got hit and had to go back and do change the title. I enjoy hearing stories about African-American experiences like this. There was, as you mentioned, a great black migration that happened in the States. It sounds as though you've done quite well for yourself and you have a strong community around that cares about you getting ahead in life. That's awesome, and we all need something like this in our lives. Thanks for sharing your backstory about you and your family. I do appreciate someone talking about something else other than their newest laptop or the latest distro or their favorite operating system. This is a podcast, and like most podcasts, there's lots of rambling and lots of pundits. I think you're making some broad generalization about people of color, POC, in America, even though you are a member of that community. I know you stated this from your experience. For instance, you state you feel that people of color are not vocal in the FLOSS community is because they're somehow afraid. I don't believe this at all. I think many people of color are unaware of many FLOSS technological tools, but so are lots of other people who are not black, brown, or women. Being ignorant or unaware of something does not make you afraid. I'm sure your family was apprehensive of being part of that great migration, but they did it. So did millions of other African Americans, and he cites the Wikipedia page about that subject. POC consume a lot of technical information just like other folks in America. They use computers, cell phones, tablets, etc. Additionally, they spend lots of money on tech-related items. Tech companies want POC communities, all communities for that matter, to consume their products. They have no interest in these communities participating in its implementation. For instance, are we to believe that Apple couldn't hire a POC as part of their QA team for their watches? He cites an issue about Apple watches and against darker skin than maybe some people have. And that's the end of part one. Do you want to do part two?
No, because then people would be comparing our narration to the same thing with each other.
All right. Systematically kept out part two from Blizzak. I think the main reason you don't see people of color in the FLOSS community is the same reason you don't see lots of black folks in lots of other industries. People of color have been purposefully kept out of tech jobs in America. It's the same reason you don't see women in many of these places as well. I would postulate that many of the people who contribute to FLOSS also work in tech in some way or another. Notice the word many, not all. Or most. Just so you know, I'm a black man, US citizen who lives in New York City. I work as a software engineer and I'm also interested in FLOSS. And that's blizzak.com.
Now, if there are not more shows from that, I don't know what.
Absolutely. It's a fascinating
keeping coming, guys. Yeah,
yes, please.
And also, excellent article. I was not aware of this. I will browse it later. Or better yet, if Blizzak or anybody else wants to do a show on the Great Migration, please do so.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that. I have to say that my ignorance on that subject was stunning when I discovered that I had it. I don't think, you know, the sort of teaching that I'd had in my lifetime not really covered this subject to anywhere near enough extent. It's,
and as I've said before in Ireland, the essential history, if it didn't involve being oppressed by the English, then it wasn't covered. So many people pointed out the English were fairly busy oppressing their own people at the same time. So, yeah.
Oh, yes. Lots of nastiness going on all over the place.
Right. Next day. O9L. My beginnings in tech, rambling about how I got into technology. Hiya, there aren't many links or anything here. Putting something in the show notes seems important. Yes, it does. I feel a bit embarrassed there because I barged him into doing this show, but it was also an excellent introduction. So yeah. Keep them coming.
It's good to hear. It's always good to hear somebody making their first steps into being an HBR host and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's good. Congratulations. Well done.
The following day, Nagios, and there's something I haven't heard about in a while, introduced some basic Nagios and walked through setting it up by Norris. So this was actually quite a nice one and kind of useful, even on a small network, I imagine.
Yeah, we used to run it at work. I was not directly involved in doing so, but it did prove to be very, very useful in a small university environment. So I've always been tempted to do it myself, but I've never got around to it. But yeah, good show and some superb notes.
Exactly, yes. It's one of these ones where you've got, I know for sure I heard that on some podcast somewhere. So
yes.
My Chromebook experience, which is turning out to be a little bit of a series now, following Zenfloaters 2 episode. This is Hookah's joining the fray about his experience with Chromebooks. So pretty cool.
Yes, it does sound. Coming. Yeah, it does sound pretty useful thing to have if it suits your needs. The thing about stop receiving updates in 2024 and it being sort of fairly useless thereafter was something. Maybe did I get that right?
Yep.
Updates stop and then it's effectively junk. I'm sure it isn't in the hands of somebody who could repurpose it, but that upsets me. I don't like hear that sort of stuff. You know, things that with built-in obsolescence. But
they are bottom of the range laptops, so not justifying it, Dave. Good Lord, no. They are bottom of the range laptops, and I really noticed here when my kids have had laptops, and they would argue that they hate it when I put Linux on them. They really hate it. They much prefer the Chromebook experience, largely because they're used to it. But that said, the laptops, when you put Linux on them, are just unusable now. You know, when they're out of date, they're really just unusable. They can't open web pages now with so much crud on it, on web pages and stuff, that they're just grind to a halt.
It has a limited lifespan for all sorts of reasons, some of which are deliberate. But I would not buy one personally, but that's just me.
Yeah, and the keyboard drives me absolutely nuts, not having, you know, the proper F1 keys and control keys. And the keyboard has, like, the power off key up where you have the delete key. So the delete key is the power off key. So you press the delete button and your laptop turns off. Yes, I know you can turn that off and all, but still, it's monumentally frustrating.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Anyway, moving on. I've been trying to get her to do a show about this particularly because it would be good in that series, but not interested.
That's just the way of it, I'm afraid,
You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Upgrading Debian on my Raspberry Pi. This is where Mr. X covers the process of upgrading Debian from GSE8 to Stretch 9 on his Raspberry Pi. Backing up in case things went wrong. Oh, yes. What a good idea. Yes. Usually 2 nanoseconds after you should have done it, you realize. Yep.
Oops. Yes. It's I wrote down here as a tortured tale. It does sound quite painful, but... I'm glad he got it working in the end. That was excellent, and it was entertaining to listen to, and knowing that it was going to be a happy ending as well.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, good stuff.
Ripping media in 2021. This is Operator, and this is how to use YouTube DL script on Windows. It's actually quite complicated. I mean, it reminds me very much of how difficult it was back Linux back in the day when you simply download this, patch the kernel, put this in, set these flags.
Yes. Tweak this stuff and be careful you don't blow your monitor up and all those good things. Yes. It's, I couldn't. I mean, I have a strange viewpoint on these things because I'm really not interested in doing this because I don't care about the stuff that you can get in this way, mostly because it's, to my mind, it's junk. But that's just me. I'm old and probably warped in my opinion. But it does send a lot of pain to achieve what you want to achieve.
I watch a lot of a lot of YouTube stuff on the Big Clive and stuff like that, and electronic stuff, educational. But I can't but help that those producers wouldn't care if it was YouTube or some peer-to-peer network that would distribute their videos, PeerTube or something. Because they're getting the money through Patreon anyway, so why would they necessarily care?
Yep.
Anyway, yeah. Next day, what do we have? A video game review. Ark Survival Evolved, also by Enigma. I've never heard of this one. Did you?
No. It's a closed book as far as I'm concerned. It sounded like fun, actually. It does sound quite entertaining. But I can't see me running out to buy it, to be honest. But that's it.
Seems something my son would be very much into, which is why I'd be very, very quiet.
I imagine my kids would be a lot more interested in it than I am. Yeah.
Sorry, Enigma. Just. Following day, Linux in Laws, the first year of the 5-year plan. Comrades, yes, we bring you the 5-year plan. And there's one comment. Claudio M, thanks for the invite. I'll have my agent contact you later. Winkity wink.
I like that.
Their number one fan. So the following day in this GIMP episode, we had example use of layers, creating a new header image for my WordPress site using layers in GIMP. Quite nice. And as always, detailed references in the show notes. Even to where he's getting the clip art from.
Yes. I thought this one was getting on into the more practical aspects of things, in terms of something that I could actually see myself doing.
Yeah.
And would go back and look at the resources here when I needed to do it. So, yeah, I mean, obviously you've got to do the set the scene before you can do something like this, but
obviously.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, really, really interesting stuff.
As with everything with Ahuka, he starts at the beginning and works his way through to the end.
Absolutely. Very good. It appeals to me very much, yeah.
And there might be a free DOS series in the offing.
Ooh, cool.
Word on the Mastodon is. The following episode, I think, had to be my favorite one. Sorry, everybody else, but an interview with a 6-year-old, it's got to be awesome. So this is Operator as well.
Yes,
brilliant.
Yes.
Love this.
And there's a comment from Lovebug. Who says, love this. Knowing how difficult it can be to engage a small child in front of a microphone without them going all shy or grabbing hold of it and making farting noises, this was amazing to listen to. Thanks for the entertainment. That's the voice of experience, I know.
Yeah, it's right there, yeah. Brilliant stuff. Oh, yeah, I forgot to say about the other episode there, FFmpeg on Mars now. Awesome.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Linux on Mars or something.
Yeah, the images are pre-processed before they're sent back.
Oh, cool.
Excellent
I did
stuff.
See some reference to the fact that That's the planet's got the most Linux on it, or something to that effect. But I didn't follow up yet. Yeah.
Very good. Next episode. In GNU Linux, there is no diversity. We're all just data. How I experience GNU Linux and the topics of diversity. Some guy on the internet. I'm just some guy on the internet. This was another, those comments. That's Bookworm said that. Welcome. Hearing your Linux journey was like hearing somebody read mine out loud. Although my journey started a few years before yours, the Windows 98 migration was my nudge to look into alternative operating systems. Like you, most of the communities I have encountered have been very friendly and helpful. I've not delved into the Arch world, but have encountered that type of attitude elsewhere. Elitism exists everywhere. How we react to it is up to us. That aside, you're welcome to one of the best communities on the web. There you go.
Oh, that's very cool. Yes, yes. Yeah, you find elitism in all sorts of places.
Yes.
As a programmer way back in the day on various operating systems, you'd go on Usenet and ask questions and you'd get a range of things. Some people would tell you to F off and some people would be very helpful and give you answers, you know. You've got a whole range of stuff like that.
I never understood the mentality myself. Why? I'm more than happy to point to somebody, you know, here is the manual, the section you're looking for is this page, and it's here, and this is the paragraph that you're looking for. Oh, I didn't even know there was a manual. Yeah, and I can understand the Arch community might be tempted to suggest people to go there because their wiki is excellent by and large. And just as in general, if you're having Linux issues, if you end up in the Arch wiki, you're usually finding out what your GUI tool is doing in the background. So gives you insight that way.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great resource, yeah, to be arrogant about it seems
absolutely
ridiculous, yeah. Really, because should be proud of it and should be pushing it forward to people who would get something from it. You know, that would be my view. But there you go.
Yeah, thankfully it's diminished a lot, and I think Ubuntu has gone some way into encouraging that, you know, nice behavior on the internet.
Yeah,
credit where credit is due. Embrace Firefox, Dave. That's our browser. Some guy on the internet out there, and I cannot disagree with him. What's Mozilla doing? Well, I'm not. I don't even know what he was referring to and what they were doing in the show, but I really think Mozilla could do with focusing on producing Firefox and Thunderbird. And
they seem to be becoming abandoned in some way or turned into something we're not going to want, probably. Mm-hmm. It's very, very strange. It was nicely explained and reasoned, I thought.
Okay. My custom DWM setup. Me talking about how I've customized DWM, added and removed patches, and written various scripts. This is Araftab.
Yes.
And comments, is it me or you? Whose turn?
It's my turn. You threw me with that name there because it's RFAB. I was trying to work out where you found a T.
Where did I get the T from, sir?
I don't know. No. The F looks a bit like a T. I bet. A quick glance, it would be easy to do. These things just throw me into a spiral. Sorry.
It's my dyslexia, Dave. There you go.
I know. But yeah, my brain just... It's probably got something wrong with it. to go into spirals when it shouldn't. Anyway, and enough of that, Witter.
Right, okay.
McNallow says in his comment, might return to DWM. Enjoyed this episode, which I began listening to and then switched over to the video version. I used DWM as my main desktop many years ago because perhaps eight or so, and it brought my rather underpowered laptop alive. In the end, I abandoned DWM because I had to use NetBeans every day, and for reasons I'd never understood, it wouldn't work with DWM. I'm back with KDE again for now. Yes, I like extremes, but you've nudged me into giving giving DWM another whirl. His phone has edited DWM into down, I would imagine. So yes. So he's gonna have a shot at DWM. Yeah, cool. I did watch the video and it was great. It's the sort of thing that where a video really does help. Admittedly, you know, audio is great and all, but I didn't fully understand. I've never used DWM. It gave me a better insight into what it is and what you can do with it and stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. There were a few hears and see there in the episode that I was able to extract the majority of it because I was hoovering at the time, so I didn't have the option to go in front of a computer. But there are one or two points, and that's always the risk when you're doing a video. First do the audio and then record the video would be my tip.
Yes. It's quite nice to have video as an enhancement to the audio, though. That's definitely a good thing. But I'm sorry, but there's no way I'm ever going to run DWM. It's not the way I would want. KDE is where I'm happy with KDE these days. So I'm going to stay there, I think.
I am loving LXQT. Just simple, gets out of your way, got all the niceness of KDE, all the configurability, and it's small and light. All I need.
Yep. KDE's come along a lot since I used it way back in the earlier days on Fedora, I think it was, way back when.
Yeah.
It's for me, it's perfect. My kids say, why are you using all that stuff, Dad? And I say, well, I like all the ability to tune it and change it and fiddle with it. But why? Why would you want to do that?
Because I
want it to be the way I want it. And
because I can. There's...
Yes. So there's a similar drive in RFAB's discussion here. He's tuned things to the umpteenth degree, and good for him.
Next day, D1 mini closed lid to scan thing, and the hours this thing has saved me. And I'm sure it's very, very specific. To give you an idea, it was use a Wemos to monitor when a lid is open or closed on the network scanner. So, you know, it's basically just a read switch, which is a magnetic switch. Magnet comes in, then a JSON file turns yes to no, or open to closed or something. But it could equally be burglar alarm triggered, or gate door, or garage door open, or whatever you want to do with it. This is those basically very, very simple thing.
Yeah, very nice. I like this. I did play with the read switches during my student days, making little gadgets that animals were supposed to operate and push and whatever. So yeah, it's a very nice technology. But the Wemos compared to what I was using is just a fantastic thing.
So, it's like having a little Arduino. You can program it in an Arduino as well and put sensors and all sorts, and you know, you can have like this thing somewhere and feed it with 5 volts, and I intend to get some to monitor MQTT and semi outside temperatures and vibration and stuff like that, whatever. I don't know what daylight time.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of possibilities. A lot of people are doing this stuff. I'm still looking over the fence at them doing it. I haven't done much yet, though. I do have Pi Pico here waiting to be used for something or other, and those sorts of things. And a few of the ESP8266s and stuff. But,
yeah.
Good.
The Wemos is cool because it's just got the Wi-Fi built in. So, there's no messing around with anything. You just get your Wi-Fi credentials and it's a computer on the network. Bob Trunkle.
Perfect.
Following day, taking advantage of a little known feature we do here in Hacker Public Radio, the narration, DeepGeek sent in a script to Klaatu, who read it. And if you're going to have somebody read it, why not have one of the best voices on HPR read it for you? There you go.
Indeed.
Interesting that HD radio is a thing. Actually,
I didn't know much about this at all. It did prompt me to go and look at the Wikipedia entries about it and compare it with European DAB. They both seem to suffer from similar issues that greedy organizations try and force the transmissions down to the minimum bandwidth, so you get you get crappy audio at the end of it. And certainly DAB is a nightmare in terms of that. You get very, very, very poor radio signal sort of quality of audio on most channels. Yeah, don't know what it's like in Europe. Certainly in the UK.
I don't actually know why anybody would listen to the radio anymore.
No, no.
So my question is more fundamental than that. Like, who listens to the radio anymore?
Well, it's this thing about having radios in cars and stuff. I mean, I've got a DAB radio in my car, and it's okay. I don't actually listen to it very much, but on occasion, for a longish drive, I might switch the radio on. But there's not usually much I want to listen to, so I just put a podcast on the phone or something like that. But but there's occasions where you want to use it, but the DAB is not that brilliant. The quality of it, even though the speakers in my car are not bad, some of the channels sound just awful. They sound worse than old shortwave or stuff that I used to get when I was a kid, you know, listening to Radio Luxembourg from a little transistor radio. It sounds like that in some cases.
Right.
Not quite as bad. It doesn't keep fading in and out and stuff like that like it used to, but yeah, still pretty grim.
Microsoft in my Debian repo. This is by Archer72, who Raspberry Pi added the VS Code repo to the Raspberry OS, which is formerly known as Raspbian. And people were annoyed, and this is how you get rid of it.
Yes, excellent. There's been some great responses to this. I think the Raspberry Pi Foundation were stunned by the response. They hadn't appreciated what the way people would take it. But I think a lot of people with less of a purist outlook, just judging from what my son said, he said, "Oh, VS Code's great. I use it all the time. So it sounds like a good idea to me." So, but then he's in the mode of, I need a thing to get the job that I have to do done, and there's a thing, and it's available, and I can use that. So, you know, the finer points are passing by. Personally, I agree with the people who are objecting to it, just to put my cards on the table. Sorry, you were going to say.
Yeah, I think that people, you know, there's the whole concept that free software has won, blah, blah, blah. But I actually think we've lost because, I've been in lockdown and I'm very depressed. But B, because people are using the software, but they don't understand why the software is there in the first place. And I'm seeing, there's great support for Linux, but now they're supporting proprietary applications that are just don't care what operating system they're running on. It's just a matter of convenience. It's a standardized blob that they have there. So they've just, we haven't won, we've just been used in a worse.
Yes. There's a lot of truth in that, yeah.
However, I can completely understand, to devil's advocate here, I can understand why they would put it in the repo, and it doesn't come as any surprise to me that the Raspberry Pi Foundation would put it in this repo. I think the Raspberry Pi Foundation never made a secret of the fact that their goal is not free Libre open source software. It's to get something to run, get technology into everyone's hands, and that just happens to be easiest using free Libre open source software. They've got lots of proprietary bundles on their thing, and this is just another piece of proprietary code. Mm-hmm. So people should not be surprised about it.
It shows a certain lack of sensitivity for quite a large proportion of the audience, was my feeling.
Well, not really. Microsoft says that they are, you know, big fan of free software.
Yeah,
The hatred for Microsoft is something that many people of a certain age will have in spades, probably, and for very good reasons. You know, do you trust the ex-murderer? It's a bit extreme. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, do you trust somebody who has shown that at some point in their existence they want to destroy you? Do you then say, oh, okay, they're actually nice now, so we'll just trust them and let them do what the hell they want?
Yeah,
and that's it's a difficult one.
Yeah, and the actions, and people say, yeah, but they're open source now and that you have to trust them. But guys, their business model has been and always was embrace, extend, and extinguish. So what protects us from that is the free, libre, open source licenses. And that's the only thing that's protecting us from that. It's not to say that there are not, Microsoft may have changed. That's fine. So let's wait the number of years that they've been hostile to Linux. Let's wait that equal amount of time that they're not hostile to Linux and see after that, then make the judgment call, not just 2 years down the road. And I've known that as far as trust goes, you know, I've come across some articles and some discussions here in the house. When trust is broken, how long it takes to recover that trust in somebody. So if you lose trust in somebody, you need seven good actions before you start trusting that person again. So equally, you could say the yardstick for Microsoft as to whether they're good guys versus bad guys, whether they've changed, is that we need to wait seven times the length of time that they were hostile to Linux to see if they've changed.
Well, that sounds reasonable to me, I have to say.
No, what would be reasonable is waiting seven times the length that they were hostile to us when they're in a position where they could extinguish us to see what they do then.
Yes.
Anyway, Dave, if that doesn't get controversy in this show, I don't know what will.
It might get quite a lot of agreement to that, actually.
Possibly, yes. Possibly not.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, yes. Hopefully we'll get.
But again, on the record, I think there are some good people over there, and they're going in the right direction. I will not accept they've submitted more code to the Linux kernel in the last blah blah blah. That is not an argument. That was a matter of convenience, business interest, because their Azure cloud was getting killed because they weren't able to run Linux efficiently. So they had no choice but to develop that code. So outside of that code, take that code away and then show me stuff. Visual Studio, yeah, okay, but is that really something that we want to be depending on? Anywho, God, I don't know where all that came out of.
There's a lot of it around at the moment.
Actually, I thought I was fairly agnostic on this whole thing, going, yeah, well, what did you expect from the Raspberry Pi Foundation? They're the ones who included Minecraft on the thing, which is a closed application.
True.
Anywho, did we do a minor victory against Designed in Obsolescence? Speaking of people,
I think we should.
Extracting a bit more life out of a device that Apple would rather have you dump. Oh gosh, this is a recurring theme this month. But there's a great show by Biza. I'm liking his shows coming in. They're good. Although I don't know what it is about people like over there. Biza seems to be getting iPads rained upon him and name a blank. Embarrassing, I've forgotten. Matchbox renovation seems to be getting Hughes. Tony seems Hughes, to be getting all these IBM laptops thrown in his way. Well, where the feck are they? Why does nobody hand me stuff? I guess old HP laptops that were dead 15 years ago brought in here. Here, can you use this? Yes, as a book prop, perhaps. What's a book, Daddy?
Yes. I know. It's the same here, really. I don't have access to a lot of goodies. In fact, I've just been clearing out some of the old computers, you know, the sort of beige box style things that I acquired from work when they would take them out of student areas and then say, right, anybody want them? Well, they went in the skip. And I brought several of them home, but they're on the way out. But it's they were rubbish.
all through the live stream.
The rubbish. Yeah. As a guy said to me the other one time when I went looking for a replacement disc for the original iPod, I wanted to buy one for my Acer Aspire. They happen to have the same hard disk. And he was charging like 150 quid, 200 quid for it. And I, what the hell? The guy goes, yeah, it's a collector's item. It doesn't even work, dude. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, minor victory against built-in obsolescence. Love this. Oh, yeah, good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the sort of thing it's good to hear about. Nicely put, nicely explained. Excellent. And designed in obsolescence is a disgusting thing, especially in the context of a planet that is going downhill fast. And I've just been listening to a climate change podcast who say, don't be so negative, but it's hard not to be. And that sort of attitude is a major contributor to to the problems.
Yeah. The Right to Repair initiative. And I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to get into electronics, Dave, was basically because the kids break something, something electronic, a CD player or something. And I just know that I just feel it in my water that there's something in there broken that's probably worth 5 cents shipped, you know. And since then, the amount of stuff that I've fixed has been amazing, actually, with just capacitors busted or connectors have soldered free or, don't be afraid. As the AVE blog says, guys, if it's already broken, you can't get any more broken.
That's true, actually. That's true. Yes, I had I have a second hand, however you call it, a remaindered switch, a managed switch that I got from where I used to work. And I had a power outage problem week or two back, and I think that killed it. And it's really a useful thing. It's a 24 port. 1 gigabit switch, which was intended to be and was becoming the heart of my house network, but really like to fix it. But and there's hardly anything in it. It's mostly fresh air inside the case when you look inside. So
have you got a voltmeter, a DVM?
Yeah, I've got the NY Bill recommended multimetery thing. Yep.
Yeah. Open the thing up and start tracing the voltages. You can't. Or thing number one, have a look around. Is there anything black, burnt?
Well, yes, I've done that, and I've looked for popped electrolytic capacitors as well, which is sometimes a sign. But there's probably stuff that's died without it, without showing any signs particularly. But
no, you could always send it off to NY Bill and he could use it as an excuse to get an electro scanning microscope or something.
Yes, indeed. I'd like to see that. It's quite large though. It cost a fair few quid to send.
Yeah, this I'm holding in my hand the component tester, which was $16, and I assembled on one of the HPR New Year shows. And I soldered floating, and I sent it off to NY Bill, and he fixed it. But in the process of fixing it, he bought a microscope which cost $6,000 or something. So
yes, a microscope would be a fun thing to have, but not at that price. Yeah,
I've got a USB one, which is actually not bad. You know, one of those El Cheapo things.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually quite surprised.
The new Raspberry Pi camera, there's a microscope attachment for that, and so it's not cheap, but I think you get a pretty reasonable USB microscope from that, actually. So that's something to put on my Christmas list for Santa to.
My wife is getting free cuddles out there, and I'm not. It's annoying. Okay, fine. It's fucking. How can you tell we're in the middle of a lockdown?
What fun. Anyway. What fun, eh?
Where are we? Linux in-laws, legacy programming and languages. This was a good overview of COBOL. It reminded me of different types of languages and where they came from and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But who was it that was telling me about COBOL? Remember a conversation, was it with McNallu on the way back from FOSDEM, that they're actually if you wanted to be a COBOL programmer in the morning, you could start and they'll pay your exams to learn it and you'd be guaranteed a job and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's so much COBOL out there at the minute.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But nobody interested in learning it.
It's a weird language. I have played with it back in the day. We had a COBOL compiler on one of the machines I was managing. And just to see if I could, I decided to write some code for it in COBOL. And it's great for doing stuff where you've got nicely defined record structures. You know, you can say, mm-hmm. read that line in and then slice it up this way. And you show a sort of a picture effectively of how it's to be sliced. And it does that really, really smoothly. But as soon as you want to do anything more complicated, I found it a little bit difficult to get my head around, having been an ALGOL programmer before that. So anyway, yeah, wouldn't fancy being a COBOL programmer for the rest of my life, I have to say.
Well, better that than stuffing chickens, Dave. Yeah.
true. Yeah, yeah. I don't think I'd convince my son on that subject, but But you're right. Yeah, I've certainly heard of there being a big demand for COBOL programmers. So yeah, but yeah, the show itself was great. I did enjoy this. And I found myself sympathizing with Martin's view of ALGOL and Pascal and Modular 2 and stuff. Never used Modular 2, but definitely ALGOL and Pascal. Say?
Why so?
Well, his view was these are structured programming languages versus object-oriented stuff, which he wasn't quite as keen on, which I tend to think, although I use object-oriented stuff quite a lot, it seems to me to be a model that's unnecessary in
many
cases. Complete
waste of time, yeah. Couldn't agree more. It's a glorified function for the case where you sometimes think you might want it, but guaranteed by the time you need to come and reuse that object, your needs will have changed. So,
Yeah.
Anywho,
it was an interesting look at these things. Certainly found it to be quite a good reference to these things. And I knew a lot of these older programming languages, so you didn't cover all the ones that they didn't cover them all. But they did a good job, I think. Never use Smalltalk, mind you, but something to play with.
Yeah. Anywho, next day. What we need for the ActivityPub network. This keynote address looks at where the Federated social media can go if we make it work. And it was Evan
Prodromo.
Thank you for not butchering that. I'm an equal opportunity name butcher.
But yeah, it was a very interesting overview of the talk. Actually, it was a whole subject area that I don't have a huge lot of knowledge in, though I do use federated social media a bit. But looking at it from a sort of design point of view is quite an interesting thing to be doing. So, yeah.
Yeah. I must say I'm enjoying Mastodon a lot more than I thought I would. Mm-hmm. And HPR is on Mastodon. Our email address, contact, blah, whatever it is, our handle is at HPR at bots in Star Space.
Yes, well chosen, well chosen.
Yeah, you know, because I was looking for somewhere to go and then came across somebody mentioned, I can't remember who, hands up. Thank you very much. Bots in Space. It's exactly free, labor, open source place. And it's exactly the sort of thing, you know, just bots coming in. So they can completely black us, block us if you want.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep, yep, yep. No, it's good. It's good. My son's homework in his MSc recently was to write a Telegram bot, which he said was the task was write a bot that would you would use in a coffee shop. So it would not quite sure to say you'd finished making a cup of coffee or something. I'm not quite sure what it was. But he said it's remarkably easy to do, and the whole thing is very very open to do.
I'm sure there is a joke in there about Amsterdam coffee shops, Steve, but okay.
Yes, yes. I don't know.
Well, I don't have the energy.
I don't know quite where the plan to set all these students on doing that particular thing came from, but he seemed to think it was quite a fun thing to do.
Okay, was that it? I believe that was it. Tell me
that's all the shows. Indeed, it's all the shows. We just got comments to deal with. So we missed a comment last month because it came in after we finished recording,
okay.
I think.
Okay, yeah, go
for it. And that was a comment to Swift110's Apple Products I've Owned episode, and it came from Windigo, who said, iPad screen. I've yet to crack a screen on any of my devices, knock on wood, but hearing the story of your iPad made me wince as if I had. As a silver lining, it made a very enjoyable episode. Thanks.
Very good, very good. Do you want to do the next one as well, and then I'll reply to my own one?
Okie doke. So, yes, there was a comment on show 2356 going back to 2017, which was Ken's show about enabling SSH on the Raspbian image, as it was in those days. And the comment came from Leo B, who says, do yourself a favor and run this guy's fork of the script, this being Ken's script. And he refers to the GitHub repo run by Steve Sainer, who's an HBR host, I believe, is he not?
Mm-hmm.
Who's done some work on this. I think I had a quick look, didn't dig deeply, and I think he forked what the work that a guy called Sesame Mucho had done on your original code, just by the by. Anyway, that's not the comment.
Okay.
Going back to the comment, it removes some of the checksum complexities and other things that confuse the original setup. Great episode and lots of good management tools through this approach.
And I replied, yes, absolutely. Please use Steve's script. But since posting the show, I've done a follow-up show, 3173, and I'm maintaining my own version on my own GitHub repo. And the reason I'm doing that, I'm still encouraging people to use Steve's one, but just somewhere for my own script because it's particular to me.
Yeah.
So I updated the link in the episode as well.
Cool.
Okay, I'll do the next one. Norrist says on Norrist's show about Ansible for dynamic host configuration protocol, Windigo says it's interesting approach. I'm currently battling with split horizon DNS and DHCP on my local LAN using Pi-hole and the underlying DNS mask server. I'm very happy to have this episode as a plan B. It's a very clear way to roll your own network services without having to worry about manual configs and fragile setups. Thanks for the great episode. Yes, it's always good to have a plan B.
Yeah, cool, cool, cool.
Yeah.
Next is a comment on show 3241, which was a community news in January.
That's why we've had no comments, Dave, because people are a month behind in their podcast listening.
What can we do? I don't
know. We're in trouble now with all the feedback we're going to get on this show in about 4 months' time.
It's from Clacker, who entitles it No SQL and Redis. Uh-huh.
Dave said, this preceded NoSQL, I imagine, and he was referring to key value stores in general, I believe, which are indeed older than relational databases and are a layer on top of which relational databases are built. When I initially heard it, I thought it referred to Redis specifically and thought, no way, Redis came out in the middle of the NoSQL boom. I was wrong by 2 days, smiley face. Redis came out on 2009-05-10, and the term NoSQL in the current sense was coined on the 12th of that same month. And he refers to the Wikipedia entry and on Redis and also on NoSQL. NoSQL? How do people pronounce that? Anyway, whatever. So, yeah, yeah. You want to do the next one and I'll do my...
I was just looking at that days and... Oh, HPR started back then, and it had already been running for nearly 4 years.
Ah, old
Methuselah. I went back to have a look at, you know, one of those technological, where we started in the whole technological boom and stuff. You know, we started before, you know, and I'd like a good idea if somebody could point me to a good place where, like, known dates within the at least free software realm started, or technology realm. You know, iPhone came out on this day, Nokia sold so many phones on this day, you know, that sort of thing. Anywho, Clacke, enunciation 2, Redis pronunciation. Most people pronounce Redis, not Redis. 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 Why am I doing this one, Dave? Why am I doing this one? It's often used as a cache to avoid expensive database lookups, much like one would use, for example, Memcache. And I've always interpreted the name to hint at, I don't need to make that heavy multiple table joins because I already read this just a moment ago. Ba-doom-tsh. Not his, that's mine. I never looked up what the official story of the name is. Wouldn't be bad, actually. Read this. Yeah,
I like the sound of that, actually. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I said, because it was something I'd said on that show, as I answered Clacke about key value storage. What I couldn't recall at the time was the name Berkeley DB, which was the sort of grandfather of these things,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
I used this for a while when it was owned by a company called Sleepcat. Later, it was bought by Oracle. We were open LDAP users at the university I worked at, and this ran on top of Berkeley DB files. I failed to remember all of this in the show itself, of course. Smiley yep. face.
Archer72 had a comment to Nextcloud the easy way, which I was joking about that he put it in because I have one called Nextcloud the hard way. And his comment was, show name. Yes, Ken. The show name was somewhat intentional. This was only after I saw your future show on the Internet Archive where while I was preparing show notes, and I thought it would be a nice play on words. Brilliant. Love it. Look at that.
Cool stuff. Yep, yep, yep.
Missing tags, Dave?
Do you want to look at the mailing list first, or?
Do I have to?
You do.
Oh, well, yeah, D&D one shot on Tuesday, which we missed, unfortunately.
Ah.
Had intended to join, but there was a mix up. And then there was a thread from started by Kevin about the Raspberry Pi thing, which prompted the show that we were just commenting about.
Mm-hmm.
Shall I go through them? Yeah, it was basically just a conversation about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's water under the bridge, really, isn't it? I mean, there's some interesting comments there, but I'm sure people can go and read them.
Okay, RPG Club. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. During the month of March, the HBR RPG role-playing game club is going to play Starfinder, a science fiction fantasy game set in the far future, based on D&D rules, the D20 system. No purchase is necessary, no experience is required. We're an inclusive group whose main goal is to have fun and to make friends. If you want to join us, let us know and I will send you further details or discuss any questions you might have. Resources include link in the show notes. Pre-generated characters are available. I So we play at 1600 UTC on Sundays on the HPR Mumble server. So that is ch1teamspeak.cc, port 64747, information on the HPR website. Again, 1600 UTC on Sundays, starting on the 7th of March. 7th of March. And guess who has been roped in to creating a character for Starfinder Dave?
I wonder.
By his son. I still don't know how he managed to get me to do it, but I now find myself looking forward to 4 evenings of doing maths cleverly disguised as a science fiction game.
That's rather fun. Yeah.
If you think I can't pronounce names, just wait until you see me trying to add up dice rolls.
My daughter's heavily into D&D stuff, but she's part of a group that plays over one of these systems that I can't remember the name of. Mm-hmm. So she's completely self-sustaining. I don't need to be involved at all, so I'm very happy about that.
I genuinely know nothing about this other than I got conned into creating a character, just get him to shut up. And then I'm now kind of involved with this character and I want to see what happens.
Uh-huh, but I mean,
40 years later, the president, and now we're talking to Ken Fallon, the president of the Starfinder D&D Club.
That could happen.
Yeah. Anywho, where were you? Anything else interesting? Yes, HPR bots in space. We just commented on that. Kevin O'Brien said, if you're on Mastodon, and if you're not, why aren't you? Make sure you follow HPR and boost the toots just one a day for the daily offering. Yeah, I've started doing that myself as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. I do when I remember. I haven't done it consistently yet.
Open bug bounty was a question we got. Anything else to say?
No.
We're also on Twitter as well, so do it over there as well. And the open bug bounty, we got a random person sending us in a bug thing, and it looked very much like spam, to be honest, but it turned out to be genuine, and we fixed the issue, which was I had PHP info in a file called php.php. Yes, I'm a moron. Thank you.
So yeah, that's quite useful then.
Yep. March RPG Club. First Sunday of March, 1700. Yes, I'm going to be running a tabletop role-playing game called Starfinder. If you're reading this, then you're invited to join. No experience is required, as you can imagine, being contributors to an ethical podcast like HPR. We're eager to teach new players. He tries every hook. If you don't own a copy of Starfinder yourself, please download the pre-generated character sheet from Blah. The game will last weekly until early April. Early April? I thought it was just March. Anyway, but we do not need to commit to playing every week. We consider 2 people quorum. We play for 2 hours on Mumble. Details we've already given you.
Cool.
Is that it?
That's all. On the mailing list, we can talk about tags and summaries.
Please,
if you
please
wish.
Do.
Yes, some geezer called Dave Morris added 10, updated 10 shows with tags and or summaries as needed. So there you go. You woke up from a long slumber and managed to do some before falling back to sleep again.
Only 414 left.
Only 400. Yeah, I started putting that number in, which I shall continue with, because it's quite nice to see that the number going down. You can look at the site, that's the page that's referenced, of course, but I just thought it'd be fun.
It really does help finding shows, because I've used that an awful lot lately, looking back for things.
Yeah, I've found myself using it quite a lot as well. It's quite fun.
Okay, that's it. That's all I have to say. I could go on, but who wants to listen to me?
and there's no events at pretty much at all in, yeah, in March. So there's no point.
Although we did have FOSDEM. I really enjoyed that. We did have FOSDEM.
Yes. That was the thing I was going to comment on. Yes, indeed. Mm. It was fun. Yeah. I think all of the videos are now available. When I looked at some of the ones I was interested in, they were available. I wasn't sure whether the entirety was now on the site, but I imagine they are. So, you could watch the videos in real time. Well, at the point at which they were meant to be available, they were available, and you could watch them stream at that point. But then you had to wait.
They were recorded, though. They had been recorded. Presentation.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. They were all recorded before the event and then just put out at the
ready to rock.
Yep. Which was a great way of doing things, I thought. It worked really, really well.
Brilliant, yep.
There was tons and tons of stuff, as you might expect. And it was some really good things to attend to.
After the presentation was done, then the presenter was in a Matrix chat, and I was blown away by the technology, by Element, how seamless that was. Within the, like, an IRC chat is going on underneath, and people are asking questions, and they're in the room, and then the video is running there in the top corner, and it was just absolutely seamless, right down to the annoying people turning off the mics on people. And then you could go to the hallway chat, so a link would come up, and then you could go in out to the hall and talk to the presenters and whoever else was interested in that topic for ages. So very, very good.
Excellent. Yeah. I was just looking at stuff on the website because Element wasn't behaving all that well for me. But I still got a lot out of it. It was really good.
I got to see more stuff there than I did by going, what, many years? Have been 5 years, maybe? I normally only ever went to the first, the opening intro thing, and then started doing the recordings. But this is the first time I was the whole day going from talk to talk, because at least you could get in, you know?
Well, exactly, yeah. I used to, going there physically, I used to make a timetable of what I wanted to go and see and stuff, but the problem was you'd come out of one thing and the next thing would be the other side of the campus, and you'd get there and there was vast queues and they said, no, sorry, we're full, go away. So, and in the early days, you couldn't watch the streamed version of it either. You know, so you just have to wait until it came out. It didn't always come out as a video because they had problems with recording them. So, yeah, this was a different league altogether.
There were people who went to a particular track of the day and then just stayed in the room and did not go to the toilet for the entire day.
I did try that strategy, actually. I did go and sit in the Pearl room and listen to everything that came up, which was good, which is quite fun.
It's kind of what I ended up doing anyway, because I followed like the main track. I didn't jump from one thing to the next. So that was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good, Dan. I was listening to a lot about Pearl 6, which has now been renamed as Raku. It's an amazing language, but very, very, very strange indeed. But it was fun. Yeah, there's lots to be seen. There still is lots to be seen. Just go on the archive site, and you'll find links to all of the videos that are available, and you can spend
brilliant stuff.
A huge amount of time looking at them, if you're so minded.
I really enjoyed the GNU Radio stuff. It was really some good stuff there that track. Did miss the whole thing with the stands. I didn't feel like the stand experience was well replicated. But
Hard to do, though, I guess. Yeah. But the stands are really something else, aren't they? They go and sort of chat to somebody about whatever it is they're talking about there and hang out.
You know, I imagine for some people, if you go to the if you go to FOSDEM, just, you know, as a guest of somebody who's there, and then you go over to a booth like Debian or PostgreSQL, and the only thing they seem to be doing is selling t-shirts, you know, cause, and oh, that's all anybody's interested in, is they're coming up to the guys going, yeah, do you have this size t-shirt? That's all the thing yeah, he seems to be doing.
True enough. Either that or stickers yeah, or
sticker little, collections. Yeah.
Stick on doodads, fluffy things with eyes that you could stick on the back of your laptop and all that.
Pretty cool. Okay, shall we wrap this up? I'll edit it and we'll send it up to the mothership.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Sounds good.
Okay, tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of the
Hacker
Public Radio. Join us now. Don't join us now. Don't share this. Do share the software, but keep
keep the viruses to yourself.
Keep the viruses to yourself. Ba-doom-tsh. All right. Thanks, Dave. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.